It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Best of the Men's Room podcast. Let the shenanigans begin.
Rescue workers spent nearly 3 hours extricating an American tourist, weighing nearly 661 pounds from a cramped restroom after he fell and became trapped. A representative of the Fire and Rescue Police under the Da Nang City Police confirmed April 23rd the incident occurred in an apartment. At around 8:30 a.m., the Command Information Center received a report that a 64-year-old American had fallen in a bathroom and was unable to move due to his weight and being stuck. Rescue personnel were dispatched to the scene with specialized equipment. Authorities said the man is approximately 1.8 meters tall.
1.8, so like 5'9", 5'10"?
Okay. They say the confined bathroom space combined with the tourist weight made standard extraction methods unfeasible. Rescue teams coordinated with local police and medical personnel to devise a plan using specialized equipment to safely remove him. By 11:10 a.m., the man had been removed to a safe location and transferred then to medical care. His condition was reported to be stable at the time.
Now, I don't know what his situation was, but they had one photograph from that quote-unquote rescue. It was only from the waist up, but he was shirtless. I do not know if he was naked or not, but based on the time in the morning, I'm like, he could have very well been naked, which, again, just makes the whole situation worse.
Our question, other than a number one or number two, why is the bathroom important to the story? 206-803-ROCK.
Hello, Adam. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bicholas.
Hola.
So I have to preface my story. This is back in the 70s. So I was about 7 years old. Had to go take a bath. I forgot to get my towel off the rack. So I crawled out of the bathtub, stood up on the back of the toilet to get the towel, and way back in the 70s, my mom had like a paper-thin mirror that she kept on the counter so when she did her hair, she could use it to see what the back of her hair looks like.
Yeah.
As I'm standing on the toilet, I slip off, hit that mirror, the mirror shatters, and I have somewhere between 8 and 12 shards go right into my side.
Oh
no.
Oh, yeah. It was paper-thin, too. So, got taken to the hospital, took a couple hours for him to dig everything out, and I got somewhere between 25 and 30 stitches.
And you said you were, what, 8 years old? How old were you?
About seven.
Okay. All right. That sucks.
And all, like, your rib cage side, did it go into your hip or anything higher?
Nope. It was, like, right in the middle between my waist and my armpit.
Jesus, man. Yeah, little kids in bathrooms. I locked probably five or six. And the second floor of the house we lived in at the time had a bathroom, no big deal. I went into the bathroom, and I locked it. And it's one of those standard locks, you know, you just twist a little pin. That's all it was. But for whatever reason, I could not figure out how to unlock it. And so my parents, they're trying, and my brother, everyone's on the other side of the door, trying to explain to me how to do this. For whatever reason, I cannot wrap my head around this concept. So I'm starting to freak out because I can't get out of the bathroom. And I hear my father say to my mother, like, I could, but I'm not kicking down the goddamn door for something that's dumb, right? Because she's like, just kick the door open. I wasn't in any danger. I'm just freaking out. He's not going to kick it open because he doesn't want to repair a bathroom door for something this dumb. So in the end, they said, just wait a minute. And I don't know what they're cooking up. And then I hear this ladder slam next to the bathroom window, and it's my neighbor. I wish I could remember his name. But anyway, this dude had to be like 80 years old then. And he comes climbing. I'll see his head kind of break over top of the window. He's got a bit of a smile on his face. He calms me down, right? He's a really nice guy. Walks over, unlocks the door. My mother gives me a hug, and I see my father just shaking his head slow with a bit of a smile. Basically, his way of saying, you are so stupid. You
couldn't get out.
Well, it's so dumb because I don't understand how I couldn't figure that out. And granted, the older you get, the simpler things seem, but like I locked it. My dad's like, dude, do the opposite of what you did when you locked it. I could not wrap my head around it. So I was in there for like 30 minutes. And it just, it freaked me the hell out. My mother said also, anytime I pooped when I was a kid, so Alka-Seltzer, their slogan at the time was a plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. As a child, I did not understand what Alka-Seltzer was for. Just on the commercial, people kind of grab their stomach, telltale sign, right? And then they would sing that jingle. So apparently, every time I pooped when I was a child, I would sing plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. All the time.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, it was weird. But it was stupid.
There's something with bathroom doors, though. And I don't know if it's because they get more action. Maybe. I don't know. It just seems like sometimes when you go to somebody's house, like, I don't know if they're flimsy. Like, those locks are, I don't know. They're not, they don't see, like, on your front door, you got, like, a deadbolt.
Yeah.
You know, or use, like, a key. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's not that unheard of. I mean, don't, I'm with your dad. You should have been able to get out of there.
I thought you were giving me some sympathy, man.
Well, I'm saying, I can fathom how as a child it happened. Your dad's still right.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't know what it is. Even, like, yesterday, I was at a buddy's house, and he has one of those half bathrooms with the little, what do you call it, pocket door.
Yeah.
And I could hear my buddy, and he's... Like, the lock's just not working or whatever. I mean, right? I'm just sitting there
laughing. Was he stuck in there?
He wasn't stuck, but it took a minute.
Yeah. We used to go to my great... Before we went to my grandmother's, we went to my great-grandmother's for Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
All right. But the whole family came for Thanksgiving, and they had just gotten brand-new carpet in the house.
Okay.
Which, if you are a kid, your shoes are off the whole deal.
Instantly, yeah.
Thanksgiving, we had a tradition among the cousins, and even, like, the uncles would get involved. We would go out, no matter what, and play football, because they had a big-ass yard.
Sure.
And we would go out and throw around for a while, and then, you know, eventually, we get into a game. And it was, like, lightly raining or whatever the deal is. So, there's a basement door to get into the house.
Yeah.
They preferred we use that as kids all the time anyway. Take your shoes off, take your socks off, take off anything dirty before you go upstairs.
Right.
And that's just the way it goes. My great-grandmother, unbeknownst to me, always used the basement toilet.
Okay.
Now, the basement toilet did not have any walls around it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a toilet that sat wherever that drain was in the corner. And that's where you used the bathroom. And I think she had a stand-up shower beside it, but there was no walls around that.
No
either.
Walls, no doors, it was no
just,
curtains.
It was just a thing that dropped down, and all the water went into the drain. So it was like me and my cousin David and Daryl, and we walked in there, man, and Grandma is just dropping a heater. I mean, and she looks at us, we're like, because we never really thought that anybody used that toilet.
Right.
For whatever reason, I'm not even sure I...
Because you wouldn't think anyone would want to use that toilet.
And it's one of those basements that's like the ceiling on it is like 6 feet at the most.
Right.
It was not finished, obviously. It was just like to me, it was like a crawl space. But they kept all their canned goods down there. She would jar peppers.
Open toilet.
Peppers, tomatoes, all that stuff down there. There was a workshop down there. And then there's this toilet. But it was just so weird to walk in there and see. And she was like... Guys, take off your socks before you walk up the steps.
Oh, she's talking to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She didn't care. She did not care at all. But that memory of just her sitting on that toilet in the basement just burned into my brain.
I've had that. It was not a relative, but there's a mall in Baltimore called Mondawmin Mall. And it's in kind of a bad hood. But it has a very large bathroom for a mall. It had to be like 18 stalls just lined as one wall. Right? Urinals are on one side, but the stalls, they just go down the entire length of it. Because of so much criminal activity there, namely drugs, gun sales, all this kind of thing, they took all of the doors off of the stalls. And I had to go in there and use the bathroom. And I just remember you open the door. And once you turn the corner, you had to keep walking to find an open stall because I had to poop. But every stall I look in, there's just a brother taking a dump. And I mean, they're mean mugging you. And it's like, man, I'm not looking at you. Because I want to check out what's going on. I'm just looking for an open stall, but it's so weird. So I finally find the stall. It's empty. There's people on one side of me. There's people on the other. And you hear the bathroom door open. And it's, I don't know. It's just a weird feeling because you hear them doing the same thing you did, right? Slow footfalls. They're obviously looking. You wish someone else would leave so they don't have to come by you. And sure enough, here's some little skinny brother peeks in. Oh, my bad, man. I'm like, what? You know, but yeah. he just keeps saying it as he goes down. I'm like, please. Put doors
there wasn't
back
a door.
On the stall.
Email the guys at the men's room at mensroomlive.com and get you some men's room IPA beer brats. They're available now at Uli's Famous Sausage.
Thank you, Bob. And we appreciate it. Let's beam our satellites to a beautiful, sunny Seattle, Washington.
I know.
Way out there in the Pacific Northwest, ladies and gentlemen, from Soundgarden. Give it up for Kim Thiel on the program.
Hey.
Hello.
What's going on, man?
We're doing good, Kim. How you been, man?
All right.
All right. Well, we got some copies of your book. I crushed it this weekend. Now, I'm a Soundgarden fan, so I found it absolutely fascinating. But the one thing I should bring up right now is you just pointed out, you know, as the band got bigger, just part of the process that goes along with that. Not a big fan of interviews, so I definitely appreciate you being here.
You've been doing a lot of them.
Yeah, that was touched on in the book in no uncertain terms.
Sometimes they're a blast.
Sometimes.
No pressure.
Mm-hmm.
What motivated you to write the book? Like I said, I read through it this weekend, and I thought it was fantastic, to be dead honest with you, man. Very, very good.
Well, thank you very much. The co-author, Adam Tependland, he actually proposed it right prior to the pandemic. And at that point, I was a little bit hesitant. I was busy with some other stuff. And then it was kind of answered for me. You know, we couldn't get together because of COVID. And he had previously written a book about weird and exotic beers. So I thought, well, we need to get together at some pub. And he has to turn me on to some cool beers. And we'll talk about this idea to, like, do a memoir. And that couldn't happen after the pandemic. But I had a lot of free time to sit around and think about it. And then people taught me how to use Zoom, and so then the interview started, and that's pretty much it. He convinced me that he thought the time was right to tell the story for a number of reasons, you know, certainly about the band and about my relationship with everyone in the band, and just he thought it was interesting that half the band were sons of immigrants, and that was somewhat topical at that point.
I do like, you brought that up early in the book, and I never knew this, but you and Hero met on the outskirts of Chicago. Was it Forest Park? Park Forest. And I like how you had said, like, you know, we're two Asian dudes, and that just is what it is, because where you grew up, no big deal, but when you guys did your road trip to make it to the West Coast, you would stop with, like, Montana or Idaho or something, and you got the sense that maybe not everybody was cool with Asians being in the country.
Yeah, I don't know if they thought, you know, we were in some, you know, just some smaller cities, certainly much smaller than Chicago, and it seemed less integrated. I mean, you'd see white guys and native guys, and maybe they thought we were native because we were tall and had long hair, were kind of dark, but you know, just weird stuff like they wouldn't answer your questions if you're getting gas or at a store, and they'd give you your change. You'd hold your hand out, they wouldn't put the change in your hand, they just kind of put it on the counter. And so you got to, like, pick it up and kind of scoot it in your hand. Just that kind of weird stuff they got, like, that we kind of experienced also in Southern Illinois when we were younger. You know, just that, you know, they just look at you and they get quiet. They just put the coins down. It's like, okay, I guess we'll leave.
Yeah.
Look, I'm a black dude, so when I walk by people's cars, I can hear them physically lock their doors. That's not even a joke. Just mm-hmm. I need to just carjack someone just to make them right. Maybe that.
Was it just you and Hero driving across the country, Kim?
Yes, it was Hero and I. We had a third friend who moved out with us, but he wouldn't fit in Hero's Datsun B210 because we needed room for our guitars and our luggage and amps. So the third guy just happened to be a 6'2", blonde, Swedish American. And he took the bus out, and we met him down at the Greyhound station downtown in Seattle.
Oh, lovely.
Later.
You know, one of the things that I thought was
interesting. He was with us, though, at some of these stops.
Yeah, yeah. You touched on that in the book. Like, it would have been great to have him to kind of, you know. But one of the things that, and I say this in all honesty, you were a very frustrating individual based on your success, but also so well-maintained with how you did it. Because the first thing that really struck me was that in your book, you said, like, Hero kept bugging you, saying, come on, man, let's jam. And you were kind of like, I'm not going to be a rock star. I'm not entertaining that thought. So you kept blowing Hero off for a while.
Yeah, it's mostly because I was really busy. I was at the University of Washington. I was working at the radio station KCMU, which is now KEXP. And I had a girlfriend, and I had a full-time job at the Daybreak Star Cultural Arts Center up there in Discovery Park. And I just didn't see time to go hang out and drink beer and do what I thought would be just kind of some boring jams on classic rock. And
what were you playing on your show when you were on the radio?
Oh, I was Well, I was supposed to play the thing that was the stuff that was popular in college music then, which was everything from Culture Club and Human League to Devo, and I like Devo.
Yeah.
My shift was late at night from 2 a.m. until 5 a.m. So often when, you know, the heavy rotation track would come up, I would just kind of log that I played it and then put on some Dead Kennedys.
I was going to say.
Flag. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, you definitely reference punk a lot, but it blew my mind that Hero had to kind of coax you into starting this band that goes on to become Soundgarden. Because immediately I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But that theme about you kind of stays true to the book. So it's a couple of and look, I've been listening to Soundgarden since you guys put out Ultra Mega. All right. So, and as you follow the band, there's just so many things that the average fan you don't know. But I love the idea. You're like, all right, there's SST Records, and you guys are big punk heads. So you wanted just the opportunity to do that. You had Sub Pop going on. They need to get their finances straight. But then you also had A&M Records, right? And everyone that's in a band wants to get that big label contract. And I love that you guys were like, yeah, it's cool. Hang on. We're going to release these first. I just thought that is such a badass move, but it just speaks to the integrity of the band. That blew me away, man.
I think the move there was, you know, the more we do for ourselves, the less they're going to try to manipulate or repackage or try to direct us in terms of marketing. It's like, look, here's the audience. We've built them in the U.S. and in Europe over these years, over these tours and these other releases. So what is it exactly you want to screw with that? Are you going to give us some Aquanet and spandex, or are you going to let us be who we are?
Yeah. Did you, Ken, was it, who owned the van? The one that's, I guess it's in Cleveland now?
Eventually me. Hero's parents fronted him some money so we could invest in the van. And so it was kind of in Hero's name at first, and then he quit. So then it was in the management name, I think, maybe, or maybe it might have been in Soundgarden's name, might have been our manager. At some point, it was transferred over to me, and it was mine. And then I sold it to EMP sometime, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, 25 years ago. And that, yeah, now it's in some museum. It's bounced around. I think it's in the Midwest, and I think it might be back in EMP's possession. I'm not sure.
Okay. What about the Spinal Tap, like that devil? Do you have any idea what happened to that? That was
so cool. Apparently, from what I remember, I just wrote about this maybe half a year ago when Rob Reiner passed, but Spinal Tap's last show on their tour was Bumbershoot here, and they left that skull behind. I think they thought it was misplaced or taken, but they just forgot to load it and take it with them. And it ended up in the possession of some friends of Jeff Ament from Jeff from Pearl Jam. Yeah. At that time, it would have been, might have been Mother Love Bone at that time.
Oh, wow.
But we were given a fill-in gig at what was then the Coliseum. I guess, you know, now it's, you know, Climate Pledge Arena. I think it was a Lollapalooza gig the subsequent year or a couple of years later. Jeff said, hey man, you know, I know where that Spinal Tap skull is, and it'd be great for you guys to use it part of your set. He got a hold of it, he fixed it up, he painted it, you know, just kind of made it look fresh and new. They got some wires or winches, and I think it might have been while we were doing the song Beyond the Wheel, some guys backstage just kind of hoisted it up behind us, and they put some dry ice in there, and so the dry ice steam and smoke was coming out of the eyes. It was crude but excellent. The fact that it was crude and the skull was kind of spinning around and wouldn't stay still made it even more perfect.
One of the things you do touch on the book, and I love this, and I was saying this to the guys earlier, I'm like, beer always comes up, but it's never excessive. Like, I don't even know if you realize that when you read through the book, but like at some point, like, before I went on stage, you know, we drink a couple beers. And after the show, you know, man, we drink a couple beers, but it seems like the term couple of beers always pops up. Now, I am married, so a couple of beer means six or more. But on average, because that's, if my wife, we had a couple of beers. I mean, that means I am piss drunk. But in your case, you said just kind of ease the nerves before you went on stage, you'd take down a couple of beers. Like, how many are we actually talking?
Well, before I went on stage, it would be anything from one to two. while on stage, I might have another couple, and certainly after the show is over, I'd cool down. But I guess what I was trying to illustrate was that there wasn't really there weren't any alcoholics or serious alcohol problems amongst the band members. You know, there was certainly drinking, but it was certainly more rock and roll or collegiate in its nature. It was definitely a handful or more, but it wasn't people like waking up in the on beside a curb, you know,
neighbor town. You know, one thing I would argue this with anyone is as far as bands go, in my opinion, Soundgarden and Red Hot Chili Peppers, as far as listening to their first albums, listening to the most recent, there's a definitive evolution to the sound. Because bands like AC/DC, you know exactly what you're getting. I love AC/DC, but I know what you're going to get. Rush, I know what I'm going to get. But with Soundgarden and Chili Peppers, both bands definitely matured. You can definitely hear songs change. So it's interesting to me, because one of the things you said was when you got to, I believe it was Super Unknown, it was kind of the first time you guys would make demos for each other instead of jamming out the songs, and you weren't necessarily a fan of that process?
It was kind of starting, you know, maybe a little bit around Loud and Love, Bad Butterfinger, but it was really prevalent on Down to the Upside, which was the album that came out in 96. We were recording in 95, 96. So around that time, everyone had four tracks, including myself. I just didn't know how to use it properly. But everybody had their four tracks, or just making little four track demos, and I just brought in some riffs that I committed to memory and would show them. So there's definitely a change in the dynamic and pre production and the way we would share things, and that change was, you know, it was accessible and convenient for everyone in the band. I think I might have found it a little bit less convenient for me.
How difficult?
There was definitely a change.
How difficult is it to work in reverse? So you've got Chris's vocals, and then you have to layer the music in, which is probably like a reverse process of how you construct a song. So, you know, as you're in the studio noodling all this crap, you know, what's the tempo of this song? You know, is it a hard song? Is it a dreamy song?
Right.
Is it kind of weird to go through that process of, you could take those vocals and probably make four different musical arrangements around them. Is that a weird part of it?
In most of these cases, the music's already there. So the whole thing's demoed. The best performances are usually, you know, Chris's vocals, because he'd make sure that he put his best foot forward before sharing with us. That way, I think I mentioned in the book that he knew that it was more likely that a song idea that he had would be accepted if he framed it and performed it as best as he could. So he was very much, very meticulous that way in his work and sharing it with us. So we had that. And there were kind of rough guitar ideas that either Matt had put down, or Ben or Chris or myself. And there were attempts at learning it, you know, over the years, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago. It was just kind of rough, like we played it in practice. So we have all the references. We know how the song should go. What we don't have are the suitable performances and sounds. And, you know, we can dial those in while working with, you know, a great producer, and by collaborating, you know, with ourselves, you know, like what guitar sound do we want, you know, how is the drum room, you know, working for you, Matt? Things like that.
Okay. One of the things I enjoyed reading was, you guys, you played one show and you were down on yourself because you'd messed up a couple notes here and there. And then you said Ben was laughing because he missed a couple of notes. But I love that you dropped in. Of course, Matt Cameron never F's up. Like, apparently, he was just like, the dude is just infallible on drums. Yeah. But one of the things that really resonated with me, too, you know, there's a way that the public looks at anyone who has gotten popular in whatever genre of what they're doing, right? And a lot of times you always wonder, are you aware of it, right? So Tom Holland plays Spider-Man. He knows he's Spider-Man. He gets paid well. But is he aware of how cool the vibe is? And one of the things you would say is that when Soundgarden went on the kind of impromptu hiatus, for lack of a better term, just 10 years, and your whole thing was, look, I just want to be the gatekeeper and protector of the music and the legacy and all that kind of thing. And when the idea of a reunion came up, I guess you had said, like, you guys played your first show together somewhere, and you just didn't realize that in those 10 years that you had not been playing with them, that Soundgarden had become legendary and even bigger than you guys were before you stopped.
That was a New Dragon show.
Yeah. I wonder if that was the show that we played with Tom Morello and Brother Wayne Kramer at the Crocodile.
I think that's the one you referenced.
We had Tad singing for us, and we call it Tad Garden.
Yeah.
We're pretty surprised. I mean, they kind of called out the guys in the band, and there's like this amazing like cheer from the audience. And there's a lot of guests on that bill. You know, Tom Morello and Boots Riley, and you know. I remember Wayne Kramer just turned around and looked at us and looked at me, and he just raised his eyebrows like, wow. And I think there were some other shows where I guested or Matt guested with some friends of ours, like coming out and playing with Alice in Chains, maybe the Pearl Jam guys. And yeah, it was a surprise. Like I had no idea
that you were awesome.
We still have this kegerator up here. You know, you can come and join us in studio.
And this is true.
Hero came in.
Last time we saw you, come on. You were talking about beer last time we physically saw you.
We got a kegerator still. We just moved to Black Raven now.
Well, why wasn't this set up? I should have been there.
All right. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Look, it even got some old stuff.
I mean, the last time we talked to you, you were 100 on the list of Rolling Stone's greatest rock guitarists of all time.
You also played Fetch My Dog in the hallway, and my wife was pregnant and mad at me.
Now you're 126. What happened?
Oh man.
Seriously, Kim, invitation's always open, man.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Yeah, fantastic book, man.
Book is Screaming Life into the Super Unknown with Soundgarden and beyond.
Read it if you like Soundgarden. Seriously, I swear to God, it is a fantastic freaking book.
Shot of the Day is coming up at 5:08. You're listening to The Men's Room.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Send the Men's Room a mushy love letter at themensroom@mensroomlive.com and scoop up some delicious Men's Room roasted red salsa at your favorite store.
Hello, John. Welcome to the Men's Room.
Hello. How's it going?
Hola.
Hola. Anyway, so back in the 90s, I published a magazine, and I got invited to Kamchatka, Russia. I don't know if you know where that's at, but it's like if you go to the end of the Aleutian Islands, about 100 miles further is Kamchatka. It's a peninsula of nothing but volcanoes. Anyway, I got invited over there to do travel stories because in the middle of the 90s, when they're in the middle of a depression. And so I fly over there. That was an adventure just getting there, but I land. And I'm not sure if anybody's even going to meet me. And sure as heck, out of nowhere, there's the most beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed woman I have ever seen comes out of the darkness and says, I'm here to take you. We get into the car. First of all the cars in Kamchatka at the time had the wheel on the right-hand side.
All right.
But they drove on the right-hand side. So I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and this woman is driving and pulling out to pass trucks. And I'm going, "Nyet!" Because she can't see what's on the... But anyway, take me to the hotel. She takes me to her apartment, which is, at that time, everything was secure like a safe. She takes me there... And then she says she's got to leave me there because she's going to work because a ship came in and she was customs at the dock. And she says, someone will come and show you around. So about an hour later, a guy shows up and we get into his 4x4 and we head out. And I'm thinking he says, we go to the sauna. I'm thinking, okay, we're going down, you know, we're going a half mile to a sauna. No, he takes me out into the hinterlands, into nowhere, towards out of a place called Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky, towards Yelezava, out onto these dirt roads, absolutely in the middle of nowhere, where you could see the Milky Way, etc. And we drive up to this compound completely encircled, about a half acre encircled by barbed wire and patrolled by Dobies and Rottweilers, who are very interested in gobbling me up. But they grab them. They grab them. They open the gate. They say, come with me. We go in. It's just this, it's like a little just cement block in the middle of the mud, in the middle of this place. I walk in and I almost fell into the cellar. There was a ladder down the cellar. He says, go down there. I go down there. There's planks across the mud. Go around the corner. There's a door sitting on cinder blocks covered with bottles of vodka and every kind of Russian food you could think of, including salmon roe, et cetera. And the sauna is around the corner. So we proceed, myself and this guy, we proceed to go to the sauna and start drinking and stuff. Knock on the door. Here comes the mayor of the city, shows up. We continue. Knock on the door. A freaking engineer, a head of the engineer of the gas pipe that's supposed to be going across the peninsula, he shows up. Then knock on the door. And this big blonde dude, blonde blue-eyed dude in a uniform shows up with this little dude. And he comes in, and the little guy takes his jacket, et cetera. And I'm going, well, who's this guy? He's head of FSB in this region. Okay. I go, oh, okay. So we continue, and we're sitting there, and I'm getting a bit buzzed, et cetera, and we're kind of laying there after the sauna, and the big guy's laying on a side couch, and I'm kind of sitting next to him, and he looks me in the eyes, and he says something, and I didn't understand it, but I go to my interpreter, I look at him, I go, what the heck did he just say? And he said, we are not so sure you are not CIA.
Oh,
ooh.
I sat there and I looked at him. I looked him right in the eye, and I didn't know what I was going to say, but I said it pretty quick. I said, I'm not CIA, but I'm sure they're keeping an eye on me right now. And the guy looks at me, and there's a pregnant moment, and everybody just started laughing. And we just continued partying. But what ended up happening is I actually taught their kids English for about a month while I was there. And I ended up married to the woman that picked me up at the airport. And we just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Wow. Are you kidding me? How did you swing that? I mean, you land in Russia. You're in the middle of freaking nowhere. There's this one hot chick. How did you end up closing the deal?
Well, it's a longer story. It's a little bit longer story, but I ended up going back and we got married in Russia. And in the middle of like a 3-4 month deal, but that guy who took me down there,
yeah.
Okay? When I came home, my wife calls me up and says, he's coming over and he needs to make a deal for chicken, for trading, cod, frozen cod from Russia for chicken. All right. I go, fine. He shows up. I start taking him around. He goes, I got to meet somebody. We go to this motel down just south of Renton. We go to this motel. We go into the room. He makes a call. The guy says, he gets a hold of the guy, and he says, yeah, I'll be there in a bit. The guy shows up at our door 5 minutes later. This guy comes in. He looks, I'm not kidding, he looks like freaking Sean Connery, okay? he comes in. It turns out this guy is the guy who got kicked out of Kamchatka for spying while I was there.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay?
This is the same dude. Okay. So after the whole thing and we get married in Russia, I got to try to get my wife over here, right? I've got everything planned and I get a call middle of the night. I get a call from this dude and he says, very powerful people feel that it would be better if you went and lived in Kamchatka rather than your wife coming here. And you know what I said to him?
I don't have any windows in my place. I ain't scared.
No. I said, you've met me. Do I look like Sean Connery to you? I said, no. And that was the end of that story. But anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but it's a long story. How did it end up? It ended up great. I'm married to literally the most beautiful woman on earth, and I'm not kidding.
I believe you.
Yeah, man. I believe you, too.
I do.
What magazine did you work for that you got invited to Russia in the first place?
It was a tiny little magazine that I started in Anacortes, Washington, called Fidalgo Magazine.
All right. I thought it was
like Fidalgo Island.
But it's a bigger story because her ex-husband ended up dying here in a car wreck. Okay. My best friend at the time was an old, quote, State Department, unquote, guy who managed to get her over here to see, because there's a tradition for them to see where he had died, right? I would normally do a story about that, but the local newspaper did the story the first week she got here, so I wasn't interested in it, but this guy was adamant, and I finally got an interpreter and went to his house, which is, by the way, 3 blocks away from the house I live in now, but he's passed away some time ago. And I walk in the door, and I'm going to interview this person, and my wife walks down the stairs, and I swear to God, it was just like the rodent looking in the cobra's eyes, man. Her eyes are so blue. She's so freaking beautiful. And I thought, oh, God, this is it. I'm done. So I never looked at her again. That whole interview, because I had an interpreter. So I'd look at the interpreter, ask a question. He'd ask the question. She'd answer the question. I'd look at the interpreter and listen to him because I knew I was dead. I knew it was over. But at the end of the interview, I go to walk out, and I'm walking out, and Jack says, hey, we're going to the lake. And I say, yeah, but I'm working. And she comes up to me, and she knew almost no English at the time, and she taps me on the shoulder, and she goes, John, I want meet you again. And I, and so let's put it this way. I went to the lake.
Okay. Yeah, completely understand, man. Yeah. God damn, man.
That would terrify me.
Yeah. Look, Russians aren't, they're just not the warm, fuzzy people, man. Yeah. I was in Hawaii. This is kind of like our version of our honeymoon. It was like 2008, 2009. And we're on the hotel property, but you know, on Maui, all the hotels back them to the beach anyway. So I go down to the beach. There's a bench. I'm going to smoke a cigarette. And one of the biggest people I have physically seen in my life comes strolling up. Like, it's like 85 degrees, not super humid, but it's hot. And he's got the full velour tracksuit on, all the gold chains. And do you mind if I sit here? And I'm like, oh, no, go ahead. So we're just talking. He was nice, but you could just tell, like, man, I'm not even going to tell an off-color joke. Like, this man, I can tell, will kill me in a heartbeat for any reason. I mean, like I said, he was very nice, but there's just nothing warm. Yeah. Not even like friendly, even very chatty, decent conversation. I'm like, but you still seem mean somehow.
Mm-hmm. Man, I think that's just part of their culture too.
It is. Yeah.
Like I know, like you, like in Russia, like you don't really smile at people and this and that. Like I'm convinced if I went to Russia, I'd be killed quickly.
Why am I talking to people?
The Ted Smith
chatting, smiling. Like I feel like people would just be generally annoyed with me. Like what is he doing?
He is CIA. He smiles too much.
Yeah. Right. Just something. Like it just. I'm nothing against Russians. I know Russian people, but I'm just like, I'm scared to go.
What is this guy's problem? He's smart.
Right? What is he up to?
What is the story that you're always asked to retell? 206-803-ROCK.
Need to learn more about general men's room shenanigans? Just visit the men's room page at KISW.com. This is the Best of the Men's Room podcast. Time to open wide and sample Ted's meat. And potatoes. Now, here's your host, head chef of the men's room, the Ted Nugent.
Head chef is in the house.
Thank you, folks. Thank you. Vile thrill. Have you caught the World Cup fever yet?
Yeah.
Watching it every single day.
Throw? You seem like you're still a little...
I got a World Cup cold. Yeah. Not quite a fever. Warming although up. We plan to get involved this evening.
Oh, I'll excellent.
Be a little more fever pitch, I think, in the Hill household.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tonight's a fun game, too. Can't lose.
Well, sure.
All right, so I think most people... Maybe most people don't know this. The United States isn't the only host country, right? It's basically North America. So Mexico's host doing some hosting duties. So is Canada. So some of these foods, they have, we have some crazy foods, and then kind of just different foods from different areas.
Okay.
What do you want to start with? Crazy foods or kind of the international foods?
I want to hear the regional stuff, because I'm curious, what is Canada doing?
Okay, all right. Up in Toronto, you have a bison Byrani, spices from the subcontinent, meat, Canadian prairie beef. B-I-R-Y-A-N-I.
I don't know that Canadian prairie beef is really a big sales pitch for me.
I think it is.
I'm sure it's good. I'm just saying the name. If I saw it on the menu, like, ooh, babe, they got Canadian prairie beef.
Was it like bulgogi or something?
No, biryani?
No, I mean, as far as what it, like, its presentation. Is it just like shaved beef?
I don't know. I mean,
grilled?
The grains swell, the meat stays tender, the whole pot sings louder than any chant, is what they say. A single spoonful will feel like a gold celebration on repeat.
All right.
Okay.
I don't know if a lot of people realize how the massive... like Indian influence in Canada.
Oh, God. Especially in Toronto.
Correct. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they have specifically sports announcers for hockey. But they're all, you know what I mean? They just had a huge influx of those immigrants and they love it. But they're the only ones. I'm going to screw this up. I don't know which language they're speaking, but I don't know. Hindu?
Just say Indian.
Yeah, okay.
I know that's not what it's called, but I'm not sure what it is.
All right. Now, Vancouver, you will know what they're
saying. Salmon.
Let me give you a hint.
Oysters.
It's pretty simple. It's pretty generic.
Poutine.
Canadian thing, but think of like...
Tim Hortons.
Like West Coast. I mean, think about us in Vancouver. It makes sense. You're right. It's poutine, but it's a specific kind.
Crab poutine?
No.
Damn.
Plant-based poutine.
Oh, come on!
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Fries. Vegan cheese curds.
Vegan cheese curds? That ruins it already.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because they're not cheese curds. It's just curd.
Does that even melt?
Ew, man.
It's a soy curd.
Oh, I would be pissed if I traveled around the world and you're out for me like vegan, like that's your big thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go down to Atlanta.
Oh, man.
Lemon pepper wings.
All right. Not lemon pepper, but you're right on chicken wings. Jerk spice chicken wings.
Ooh, oh, okay.
Oh, I'm down with that.
Yeah. As I say, they say wings bathe in an authentic Jamaican jerk seasoning. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Smoked over that hickory. Drizzled with a raspberry glaze.
Man, if you can do jerk right.
Yeah.
I'm with you. And I think jerk chicken.
Atlanta's going to get
it. Very, very close to just making it so hot you can't eat it.
That's my issue.
If you have a wet spice with jerk, which typically you rub chicken with.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be extremely careful.
Correct.
Fire your ass up.
But here's the thing. It's Atlanta. They're going to get it right. And two, in Atlanta, they don't care if your mouth burns.
No.
No, they don't. But for me.
Right. And I might be a little different, but yeah.
All right. Now, Seattle, we're kind of famous for the Seattle dog.
Of course.
Do you know what they're offering for this one?
Is there some new topping on it or something like that?
Yeah. I would say think of our influence here. Miles actually brought it up earlier.
So Korean barbecue hot dog?
Kimchi glazed corn dogs. Traditional corn dogs get a Korean twist, fermented kimchi glaze, a hint of gochujang, and a crunchy exterior.
I mean, look, they took fair food from Kansas.
I would try it.
All right,
it doesn't sound bad, but it's just like, okay.
But Korean corn dogs are a different beast. Some of them have like cheese on them. And like,
have you had Korean corn dogs?
I've seen photos of them. I have never gotten involved, but it's like a whole new thing.
All right. Okay. I'll give it a try.
And they take it up a level.
Yeah, like I said, I would absolutely try it. It sounds underwhelming, but I'm sure it's very good.
I haven't had a corn dog in a long time, right?
Even the minis.
That's a lie. I had a mini corn dog Tuesday night.
That's a long time.
That's 3 days ago, man.
Jesus Christ.
I haven't had one in a long time. It's been 48 hours.
Been a minute. You probably used to haven't even pooped it yet. It's still in you.
Okay. I was thinking corn dog on a stick, but yeah. You're right. Mini corn dogs count. God.
How many did you have?
Well, there was an order of 8, so I had 4. We split it.
That's a lot.
You had 4 corn dogs and did not remember 48 hours ago.
Jesus Christ, man.
I know where you were then. You know what? That's where I had my most recent one, and that's why.
Well, they just added it to the menu.
I know.
Okay.
I know. God
damn it.
Jesus.
All right.
Wait, just, Tuesday.
It's in my lower intestines right now.
Well, right. Mini corn dogs don't count as a corn dog.
Yes, it does.
It's just mini.
It doesn't have a stick.
A foot-long hot dog is still a hot dog.
Right.
Would you say if you went home and you ate little cocktail weenies, I mean, you're just eating hot dogs. That's not the same.
Are they in cornmeal and deep fried?
No, they're just naked.
Well, no, of course.
Oh, no, the corn dogs, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're corn dogs, Dad. They're just small. It's like a miniature horse. It's like still a horse,
exactly.
Man.
It's like a slider. It's still kind of a hammer.
Right.
I guess you're right.
Jesus.
I guess I just...
2 days.
Two freaking days.
That's been a long time.
Well, I was very confident.
I slept twice.
I was like, man, I haven't like hunkered down on a corn dog. What about mini ones? Well, yeah, sure, those.
Yeah. Tuesday.
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, not even last month. Like 2 days ago, man.
Tuesday. Anyhow, the Korean corn dogs are a whole different thing. I kind of like this one. In Mexico City... You can get a saffron-infused tostada.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. If you know what saffron is, then there you go.
I like saffron. They should serve their churros, man. There's a place in Mexico City, I guess they have like the world's best.
Yeah.
And we accidentally found, like a friend of ours is like, dude, if you can find it, go to this place. I don't know what you know about Mexico City. It is massive, so you don't just find anything. But we were looking for something else entirely. My wife taps me, and she's like, that's the place.
Oh, nice.
We got more churros than any human being should. And trust me, the kids were involved. We took them all down. They are so freaking good, man.
What else was on there? It's kind of interesting. I like down in Houston, you get a coconut lime aqua fresca.
I'm not big on them. My wife loves those things.
I'm big on them now.
Really?
Yeah. But I couldn't find one Saturday when I was down at Burien at their street fair. But I did have a michelada.
What's a michelada?
I don't have to say it like that.
Yes, you do.
It's like a giant thing of beer with, I want to say, tomato juice. And then they line the rim with, like, tahini. And there might be a little, what's the red sauce they put in, like, the aqua fresca? It's kind of, like, thicker. It almost looks like a hot sauce, but it's not.
All right.
They're delicious, man. You can lick the tahini off the
Tahini's
rim.
Tahini's the best for a margarita, too.
And they, like, if it's salt. And generally, a michelada is going to be bigger. So, like, the bottle of Pacifico is sitting in there.
Okay. Mm. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, here's some of the crazy foods they have. Let's see. Down in Miami, you can get fancy AF tots.
Fancy AF tots.
Three fried hash browns topped with caviar, crema free.
Crema fresh? I'm guessing.
F-R-I-C-H?
Yeah, fresh.
Right.
Fresh.
And chives. How much do you think that cost you?
$50?
$75.
I was going to say, the caviar is the...
Hash browns with caviar.
I'm
a little bit ghetto. I'm a little bit rich.
If you're really eating caviar, you're like, man, we really could use some hash browns right
that's
now.
That would elevate this.
This is a new thing where caviar is like having a massive moment, not just with the ultra rich, but like all the food influencers. And it's like, we're doing bumps of caviar. It's like, look, I've had caviar.
It's not great.
It's not that great.
You know
and
what?
Also, but it's like having Alaskan king crab and like, oh, I got to have Vienna sausages with this. It just doesn't make any sense to put those two things
hash
together.
Hash browns.
Let's see. Up in Vancouver, you can get a maple bacon smoky.
Makes sense there.
It's a smoked sausage topped with bacon onion jam and maple syrup.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Also in Vancouver, besides the little, besides the plant-based.
Besides the bull-ass.
Right. Poutine. You can get short rib poutine. Ooh.
Okay.
That sounds
great. Now we're talking.
Yeah, exactly. That would be super delicious.
I'm in for that.
What else do they have? Ooh. The Twinkie Cheeseburger in Los Angeles. It's a cheeseburger topped with bacon-wrapped jalapeno, stuffed with brisket, and cream cheese.
Okay.
So this is of a Texas Twinkie-inspired, not like Twinkie the Kid
see,
Twinkie.
I can see them cutting a Twinkie down the middle and putting a hot dog in it, but I don't know how
I bet you could put two little Smokies in there.
I bet you could.
But why would you?
I just won't remember eating it.
Right, well, Texas Twinkie is basically what they're doing, right, with the bacon-wrapped jalapeno, the brisket, and the cream cheese.
God, that sounds good.
Okay. Man.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of good stuff. And then I like this one. They just add this to the list, too. They go, lastly, worst of all, these are kind of ridiculous stuff. $20 beers, as they say. In Mexico, for example, minimum wage is around $18. So you're paying more for a beer than you are
for it. Paid, right?
Yeah. Well, at least our minimum wage is higher than most places here.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a guy traveling. I forget where he was from, but he was in Atlanta. And he's just like, why are your concessions so much cheaper? It was like the third game. Because Atlanta, again, they do a great job of specifically having like affordable items. They have crazy stuff too, right? You can spend $25 and some.
But you can also not, right? They give you the option of not going broke.
Correct.
Hear that, climate pledge?
Well, the thing is, and nobody wants to hear this. Well, nobody on the business side wants to hear it because they can't get their head out of the mud. Atlanta, again, they offered all that and they found out they made more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because more people spent money.
And more people came to show up because they could afford it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a blank idea. Okay, coming up at 5:08, we'll drink and toast with a shot of the day. You are listening to The Men's Room.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reach out to the Men's Room on the socials at Men's Room Live and enjoy the new Men's Room IPA from Black Raven Brewing.
Game is Big Dummy, 206-803.
Big Dummy!
Hello, Tom. Welcome to the Men's Room.
Hola, gentlemen.
Hola.
Tom, team sober?
Team sober.
All right, you were one and done last week, weren't you, Tom?
I think so.
Yeah, man. All right, Men's Room Paul, you're going to get busted for one, Tom. Cannibalism, necrophilia, bestiality, or be attacked by a shark.
Be attacked by the shark.
Shark attack. All right.
Yeah, shark attack.
A little down pride.
Out of the three, like, I'd rather be attacked by a shark. Yes.
Yeah, and like I always say, New Smyrna Beach, like, I'm just getting bit. There's not deaths there.
You don't know that. You might be the first.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees. I'm debating between the shark and cannibalism. And my thought is just this, like, bestiality, necrophilia, you're just weird. Cannibal, you're weird, but if I go to jail, people there are scared of me. Because I'm a cannibal.
But doesn't
right? It's a game changer.
Doesn't something happen to your body if you eat?
That's what they want you to believe.
Well, I'm saying
Ted's doing fine.
Yeah.
Haven't noticed any changes with him.
Have you had the steak at Slither?
Oh, damn. The Slither steak. 95% people. All right. Tom, here's your question. What three animals are mentioned in Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham?
Oh, let's see. Fox. Oh, yikes. In a box with a fox in the... Oh, yikes. I don't know. I'm going to say a horse and a chicken are the other two.
They're not, but I'm curious. What do you think rhymes a horse?
Of course.
Because you're right. He will not eat them in a box. He will not eat them with a fox. I will not eat them with a horse because your mom is a horse. I mean, I don't know. So it's fox.
Okay, of course, rhymes with horse.
It does. It does. So we have a fox, and he will not eat them in a box. We have a goat. Therefore, where do you think he also will not eat green
in a boat.
In a boat. Miles, you're good. And finally... Finally, we have a mouse. Where do you think it is he's not going to eat green eggs and ham?
Oh, yeah, the house.
That's right. Okay. He will not eat them with a mouse. He will not eat them in a house. He will not eat them with a fox. He will not eat them in a box. He will not
he's
eat
very
them
particular about where he eats these.
Very, very specific. Very specific. All right, Tom, your question. Which star is represented by placing a star on top of a Christmas tree?
The star that led the wise men to Jesus.
Need a more specific name.
Ooh.
The star
I'm
of...
I'm not sure, is it the Star of David?
That would be Judaism likes the Star of David, and for Christmas tree, it's the Star of Bethlehem.
Oh. Right.
Which represents lovely Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Ooh, is that where that is?
If you've never been there, consider yourself lucky. All right. Your question, what desert surrounds Las Vegas?
Ooh, yikes. I didn't know it was actually a desert. I mean, it's hot and dry.
That is
that's a desert.
That
but
is...
for most.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a name.
And you've heard of it.
You've definitely heard of it.
Everyone's heard of it. I just don't think most people realize that's the desert that Vegas is in.
I don't know. I can't think of. Any.
All right. The Mojave Desert.
Mojave.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And all I found out
recently. That was more like Edwards Air Force Base is Mojave.
I think it's just
didn't
that
think
big.
It went all the way to Vegas.
Yeah, Miles is right. That desert's massive.
And by the way, I only found out recently that every time I've been hanging out on the strip in Vegas, you're not in Vegas. You were not in the city of Las Vegas. You're in the city of Paradise. I believe Fremont Street is actually in
like
Las Vegas.
Desert Valley, isn't that part of the Mojave?
I don't know, man.
I think it stretches that far west, doesn't it?
It's a big-ass desert. Yeah. That's all I know. But I don't know entirely what it encompasses.
Or Death Valley, whatever it is.
Ah, lovely Death Valley. All right, your question. Elliot Ness is best known for fighting organized crime in what city?
In Chicago?
It is Chicago.
Good job, John.
Chicago. There you go. Chicago, yeah.
Game is Big Dummy, 206-803-ROCK.
Big Dummy!
Hello, Justin. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, gentlemen.
Hola.
Justin, sober or not sober?
Sober for now, Miles.
Okay, for now.
Indeed.
All right. Going to get busted for one, Justin. Cannibalism, necrophilia, bestiality, or you could be attacked by a shark.
Everything is gross. Give me the shark.
Give me the shark. We had a feeling this was going this way.
Yeah, popular day.
Yeah.
Just given the options.
It's a good day to be a shark. Shark attack. I can't wait.
Yeah, when they get killed or fended off, I just can't do that. I can't defile bodies, and I'm not going to defile an animal.
You know, we appreciate that about you, man. That's one of your better qualities.
You'd be shocked, man. When I googled necrophilia, which is always good when you do that at work, there was a guy in BBC story, and it was a guy, mortician or somebody, and his abuse had been going on for like over 20 years.
Jesus,
there were more than 100 individual cases that they know of this guy, and I was just like, oh my God, man.
Well, the story we have for today out of Phoenix, you know, one of the things the cops pointed out, they said, look, we have not informed the relatives of the corpses that have been violated. And they're like, why not? And they said that it's a very delicate thing because you have to remember, if a body's in a morgue, that person is still being grieved. It's not like they're there for 15.
Yes,
so
yes,
they're like, can you imagine calling them hey, you know, the Ted Smith, we know he died and this is a tough time. Yeah, 3 days. Yeah, someone else who had sex with the body. Like, they're like, look, man, I don't even know if I'd want to know.
I was about to say, I don't know that you need to tell those people.
Because imagine, like, doing the eulogy, and you're looking down, you know, open casket, like, yeah, there lays my mother. You know what happened to her after?
Like this.
How did her face get like that? Yeah.
She looks like Mr. Bill.
Yeah, I mean, dead serious. I don't know that they need to tell those
You
parents.
Don't.
Yeah, there's.
You don't.
It's not going to help anybody.
Would you want to know?
She looks like the Scream.
And, I would not. Like, why'd you tell me that?
Look, there's a chance it might have happened to a relative or somebody we know.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to know if it happens to my dead body.
And, we won't tell you.
You should wake up in the middle of it. Hey, none of that.
I was just sleeping, man.
Fall back down and die.
None of that.
None of that.
Oh! Yeah, exactly. Like when his arm got cut. Yeah. Just wake back up and go, no. No. Let me die. All right.
Sick bastard.
All right, Justin, your question. Name any one of the three purported contents of the Ark of the Covenant. If you open it, it'll melt your face off.
I don't know, the Ten Commandments.
Hang on there. Right there.
Once again, bedroom colors, here are the seven words you can't say on
and
the radio.
And that's what you drop after the Ten Commandments.
And
F me run.
Please keep those words in mind.
Moses said.
Now back to the program.
I'll let him go because I think he was generally surprised that he got that right. So I'm like, all right.
Good enough.
He was shot. But yeah, it's the Ten Commandments, Aaron's staff, and a pot of manna.
Email the guys at the men's room at mensroomlive.com and get you some men's room IPA beer brats. They're available now at Uli's Famous Sausage.
And we made it to drinking time.
Somebody out there deserves to be recognized. And the men's room knows just who it is. So to you, we say, bottoms up, sailor. You're the toast of our shot of the day.
Drink time it is, and as usual, we head to the drink desk and Steve at Thrill Hill to find out who we're toasting.
Yes, indeed. And today, we toast Andrew Martin. Andrew is one of the players in the World Series of Poker $1,000 Super Seniors Tournament. Well, on day of the tournament, Andrew was issued a warning because of his card guard. Are you familiar?
No.
Okay. If you don't know, a card guard is used to protect your hand. So sometimes a dealer, they'll reach for cards that they shouldn't. The card guard is a gentle reminder that your cards are still in play. So you place this thing on top of your chips, and when the dealer looks, what you're saying, I'm still in play. Okay. Right? That's all it is. And all the poker players use it. Now, official tournament rules, they state that there will be no foreign objects on the table except for a maximum of one card guard. They can be no longer than 2 inches in diameter and no more than 1/2 inch in depth. And Andrew's card guard, it met those requirements. He was, however, issued a warning because the card guard of choice happened to be a stainless steel butt plug.
Dough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a straight-up butt plug, man. And he has it on top of his chips. They look very unhappy. But as he points out, he went through the rules for 2026. It doesn't say you can't use a butt plug. It met all the measurement requirements. I mean,
all right.
That's all. So, okay. Yeah, he was issued a warning. So, if you play poker, don't use a butt plug as a card guard. So we pour this booze and we drink this booze because we think it's yummy.
Yummy!
So over the tongue and down the throat to party in our tummies.
Down the hola, bitchola.
Thanks for listening to the Best of the Men's Room podcast. Want more of the Men's Room? The greatest story never told with Miles and Thrill.
Aw, oh, man!
A Double Flush production.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.